And welcome to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco. I'm sitting in for Steve today. I think he's out there ice skating on the roads today a little bit. I'm not sure where he went, but I know he. I heard from some of the others in the studio he's trying to get from point A to point B somewhere. So good luck out there, Steve. And everybody else, take it easy because clearly it's a mess out there. And keep your eye on your rearview mirror, too, so you don't get 60-mile-an-hour enema from somebody, shall we say, you know, get rear-ended by somebody not paying attention to brake lights or anything else. Later on in the show, we're going to have Representative Austin Schauer talking about civility in politics. There's a open forum tonight in West Fargo. Jill Kringsted, Public Service Commissioner in North Dakota, will be joining the show. NDSU Dean for the College of Business, Catherine Berkland, talking about their new banking program and agreement. And then we'll have Levi Bachmeyer, the newly minted North Dakota Superintendent of Public Instruction. But before we go to Levi, Addison has a couple things that he wanted to share with people.
Yes, and I love sharing things with people. It's one of my favorite pastimes. I just want to let all of our wonderful listeners know that today the phone line is sponsored by Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. They've recently expanded, and they can get you in fast. They're now offering counseling, OT, PT, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment today and get in this week at valleychristian.co. And I also want to ask everyone, have you noticed how many Vision Ford and Vision Lincolns you're seeing here in the metro? One of them is Steve's, and I've let it be known before, and I'll say it again, I'm pretty jealous of it. It's very nice looking. They'll get that first car feel all over again because they make buying a car easy. 15 minutes to do all the paperwork, and they'll come to you for the sale and the service. They've got 18 service drivers to get you to your car, or your car to you for those oil changes and service visits when they come up. Buy your Ford from Ward. Drive with Vision. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Online at drivewithvision.com.
Thank you much. Thank you much. I'm really excited to have our next guest, Levi Bachmeyer, who's the Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state of North Dakota. According to my calculations, he's been in his job 87 days, a proud graduate of Concordia College in Moorhead. His work has included working on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, where he taught and coached. He's a former finance director for the West Fargo Public Schools, where they absolutely loved him there. And he was an advisor to Governor Burgum, father of two young kids. And he was appointed by Governor Armstrong for the seat vacated when Kirsten Baszler accepted the position in the Trump administration as Assistant Secretary of Elementary and Secondary Education last fall. He's, you know, really high on research and content and talking to people. And he's right now he's in the midst of a tour of all the school districts in the state. Where are you at today, Levi?
Good morning, Tim. Good morning from beautiful Golden Valley County. I'm sitting in the high school parking lot here in Beach.
Oh,
okay. So thanks for having me on today.
So what, I mean, how many school districts are there? I think, 175? And what number are you on today?
Yeah, we've got 165 operating school districts this school year. That's going to go down one or two next year. I'm over two dozen, I think shy of 30, but I'm having just a wonderful time getting out, putting some miles on the truck, and hearing from teachers and students and community leaders about how we can lead the nation with America's best schools.
So let's talk about to use the title of a great movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. What are you hearing from people across the state as far as things that are, you know, being done really well, things that they're really excited about in their school district, for starters?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are just really proud of their school district and all the great schools that I've been visiting. It's a community effort. It's great teachers. It's students who work hard. It's a community that supports the school. Everywhere I'm going, I'm trying to see teaching in action, and I'm also trying to have a conversation with community leaders. And I appreciate, you know, that it isn't just, you know, teachers and school board members. And of course, they have an incredibly valid perspective, but superintendents have been, you know, bringing in local business owners or local pastors, mayors, you know, folks who work in their economic development, you know, work in town. And I think that's a great sign that in North Dakota, we believe that, you know, education is a team sport. And where we have the strongest schools, we have, you know, the strongest communities. So that's been really great to see. We take a no-nonsense approach here, you know, for the most part. And I think that's reflected in the fact that we're one of the higher performing states in the country when you look at tests that compare, you know, North Dakota to other states in the nation. And I'm a firm believer that we can be number one.
Yeah, I totally believe that. We have some of the best teachers in the country, if not the world, too. So as far as some of the differences you encounter, because clearly if you're in a really small school district like mine used to be Forbes, where we had 34 kids in all of high school versus Fargo, vastly different challenges. So let's start with small versus large. What some of the things that they can do that are challenges? What some of the things that they can do that are, you know, really something to hold proud and share with other districts?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I have appreciated is that every school district is different. And so there's no feeling of Groundhog's Day going from, you know, one mm-hmm. to another to another. You're not hearing the same thing. People are dealing with different challenges. We were talking about, you know, the impact of housing on, you know, maintaining and growing enrollment in Lakota last week. You know, in Valley City, talking about the strength of their collaboration with their, you know, with their local, you know, the university, Valley City State University. At the same time, though, whether you're really big, I think the largest school district I've visited so far is Williston, you know, or really small, there's also some common challenges, which gives me hope that we can work together to support all of our students across North Dakota. The state has been spending a smaller percentage of its budget on K-12. I think that's the wrong approach. I hope to, you know, have conversations with legislators from big cities and small districts that, you know, this is important. This is vital to the future of our state. And I can't think of anything, you know, more worthy of investment than, you know, in K-12 education, teacher retention, recruitment. We've got great kids, and, you know, the number one, you know, single factor that will impact, you know, the learning that students, you know, are able to achieve comes from the quality of the educator in the classroom. So, you know, and that's something that I've heard everywhere that I've gone, whether it's been big, small, everywhere in between. We just do not have as many people going into education anymore. We need to do a better job of recruiting and retaining the teachers that we have. Pay is certainly an important part of that. It's not the only part of it. And so I've really enjoyed, you know, the opportunity in doing this. It's there's similarities everywhere you go, but there's also some really, you know, profound differences in terms of the challenges that, you know, relate to schools, but also relate to the community and how that ultimately impacts, you know, the experience that students are having in the classroom.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, wanting you to respond to this next comment, but, you know, I do have a worry if the food provision for free food in schools passes at $140 million or $160 or whatever it is, with a shrinking budget that's projected for next session, you know, what will that do to teacher salaries? Because there's only so much money to go around, and they're not going to raise taxes. People don't want them to raise taxes, that's for sure.
We don't need to raise taxes. I mean, just in 2019, the state's budget, 33% of it went to school districts through the funding formula, which you had a huge hand in, you know, getting established in policy. So thank you for that. 33%, you know, just 7 years ago, it's now hovering around 25%. So when I hear people say, oh, if the meals pass, that means we're going to have to cut educational funding. I think that that's a false trade-off. I think I want to have a conversation with legislators about, you know, what's happened that's caused us to deprioritize investing in schools. You know, we've gone backwards in average teacher salary. We don't have, you know, some of the administrative bloat issues that I think you see in higher ed and other, you know, other parts of the country. So I really want to understand what's, you know, got us to this point. Everywhere I go, you know, I hear from across the political spectrum of really conservative, you know, school board members to more progressive school board members, people just are wondering, you know, with inflation has been where it's been and average teacher salary rankings going backwards, you know, how can we have this conversation in Bismarck, sort of reprioritize using the resources that we do have mm-hmm. to fund our priorities? And I can't think of anything, you know, more important in the state budget, maybe public safety. But that hasn't been growing. So something else is happening where our priorities have been shifting. And I think part of my message is, you know, to lawmakers to say K-12 is a worthwhile investment. And it doesn't mean you have to raise taxes, but we, thanks to the oil industry, thanks to smart tax policy, I mean, we have the resources necessary to meaningfully invest in our schools.
Yeah, and we're going to go to break here in a second, but I'll mention, I think some of the problem, I'll call it problem, you know, I think the state's done more one-time investments, so that percent is a little bit changed because of that. But, I mean, certainly schools should be, K-12 schools should be a priority. So I'm here joined with Levi Bachmeyer, the superintendent of public instruction. And Levi, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, if you can hold on. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. And again, if you want to give us a call, you can call us on the line at 701-237-1590. And actually, if you want to text me, you can text me. I think everybody who wants that has my cell phone number. It's 701-367-5954 if you'd rather text me a question here for Levi or any of the other guests. We're joined by Levi Bachmeyer, superintendent of public instruction. We got about 8 or so minutes left. Levi, in your tour and your meetings with legislators and policy officials and superintendents and principals, are you identifying any needs in terms of that could be, hey, that makes, you know, that makes sense. That seems like a pretty easy fix. I mean, probably most of the easy fixes have already been taken care of over the years, but are you seeing some things out there that are kind of floating to the top as far as needing to be addressed, whether they're easy or they're tough?
You know, like I mentioned before, I think teacher retention and recruitment is an issue everywhere that I've gone, big and small. Health insurance, you know, which certainly isn't limited to K-12, but these school districts, you know, now with the 3% property tax cap and, you know, 2 or 3%, you know, increases in state aid, they're just, particularly in our rural communities, they're not going to be able to sustain 13-14% annual increases. I mean, I was in Larimore last Friday and they've had 17% increases over the last 2 years. So I spent a lot of time as the finance director in West Fargo, really studying how do we, you know, better control health insurance costs without cutting, you know, value for employees. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have to do, you know, something similar because I'm especially nervous for these smaller schools. That is just an unsustainable increase. Again, it's not limited to education, but it's certainly something that we're going to have to talk about. You know, when it comes to student performance, which is ultimately why we're all here, you know, I think it's a pretty common sense, you know, back to basics agenda, you know, keep politics out of schools, have high expectations, you know, hire great teachers, put your resources, you know, in the classroom and good things will happen. You know, that all comes from local leadership, you know, and strong administrators and strong school boards. And so I think part of the conversation is how can Bismarck, you know, both help school districts continue to improve. We have an obligation to these kids, that our schools are getting better every year. And at the same time, you know, how do we also stay out of the way? Because a one size fits all approach is not going to work in West Hope the same way that it works in West Fargo or even in Williston. So, it's been a lot of great conversations, but you know, the common themes is let's just keep our eye on the ball. Let's stick to the basics, use some common sense and work really hard. And I think good things are going to happen for our kids.
When I was in the legislature, you would encounter some amazingly different things than you're used to. For example, one of my college friends had two kids that were two out of the six kids that went to this school in Western North Dakota. Literally, they drove their vehicle to the river, and then in the spring and fall, they took a boat across, and they had another vehicle, and they would drive like 6 miles farther to a mobile home, and that's where they taught. I mean, that was just, for me, unfathomable. I just didn't realize something like that exists, and I'm guessing that's kind of some of the things you're running into that is – like, oh my gosh, these people are doing heroic work with really challenging circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'd say there's two objectives in visiting all these schools. The first is to learn about, you know, the reality that each of these districts and communities are facing. And the second one is to say thank you. I mean, we've got, part of the reason we have a great school system is we have great teachers. We can't take our eye off that ball. But I mean, to your point, it's a much more diverse state than people give credit for. We have German speaking colony schools. Mm-hmm. We have large school districts like Bismarck, over 13,500 students. My first school visit was to Marmouth down, you know, here out in the western part of the state, four kids, 1, 2, 3, 4. So yes, there's just an incredible amount of variety and just really unique circumstances in each of our school districts. Some kids have to walk outside to eat lunch, because the lunchroom isn't in the building, you know, that they're being instructed in. So it's, there's a lot of commonalities, but an incredible number of differences.
Yeah, Marmouth apparently would have as many dinosaurs buried there as they do have students. That's weird. But a topic that you may or may not interface with, at this point anyway. But, you know, some of the talk around has been about the measles outbreak. I think there's been 7 identified cases. Has it really hit the schools yet in terms of doing some planning as far as what to do to handle that? Because we know the North Dakota High School Activities Association has become involved in that because of the athletes. But is it at the school level yet where you've had to deal, where the school districts have had to deal with anything?
Yeah, and we've, you know, tried to reiterate the guidance that has come out from the Department of Health. You know, our DPI is focused on educating children, not, you know, getting outside of its lane. So we've shared information that we've received from the Department of Health. I know the High School Activities Association has been, you know, actively involved this week at state wrestling. I'm excited to watch the finals on Friday. So good luck to all of our wrestlers out at the Fargo Dome. But yeah, it's a topic of conversation. People want to keep, you know, kids safe, but they also know that these are really important experiences for young people as well. So we're just trying to make sure that people have, you know, the best information, that they understand what the law says, that the Activities Association is communicating what its policies are. And so that's, I mean, I think that's what our role is in all of this.
My next question, we got about 3 minutes left with Levi Bachmeyer, relates to college and work ready. Are our students that graduate more college ready and work ready than they were 10 or 15 years ago? And what can be done to ensure a ever higher percentage of them are work ready and college ready as you oversee your administration?
Yeah, great. I mean, great question. Our goal isn't just to send kids to 4-year schools. You know, we have a framework, a graduation framework. It's called Choice Ready. We set another record this year, you know, over, I think, 72-73% of our high school graduates are deemed choice ready, which means that they have, you know, demonstrated that they have the ability and that they're ready to, you know, whether it's join the military or get a job or, you know, go to more school, go to a post-secondary opportunity. So I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of. That number has skyrocketed since we started tracking choice ready rates about 10 years ago. And so I think people have a lot to be proud of there. I think there's always more work to be, you know, more work to be done. I think in some ways, you know, what I'm hearing in talking with employers is it isn't just the academic skills. So, you know, standardized and tests are, you know, an important metric, but not the only metric. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that just sort of naturally happened, you know, at home or growing up on the farm around some of those, you know, career ready practices schools need to, I think, focus on the skill portion as well as, you know, traditional academic content. And I'm not talking about, you know, crazy outlandish things. It's just the basic skills of communication and leadership and eye contact, and things that I think we've taken for granted for a long time. And those are the skills that employers are saying that they want from students. And so I think schools are working hard to, you know, respond to that. And those skills are helping ensure that kids will be more successful in college, if they're on their own for the first time in their life, or going, you know, directly into the workforce, or joining the military. So we've got a lot to celebrate, but I'm, you know, not a guy who, you know, says good is good enough. And I think we can keep getting better in that space too.
In 30 seconds or less, one of your longtime friends, Robbie Loff, is the executive director of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. Are there things that the K-12 schools will be able to do in the future to interface and use that as a great resource in our state?
Yeah, Robbie's an incredible guy. The library, you know, is going to be our Mount Rushmore. Medora is one of the most magical places on earth. I have a dream that, you know, we focus on getting fourth graders into the national park, and we focus on getting every eighth grader into the library. And I hope that we can make that happen. It's just such an incredible asset for our state.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Levi Bachmeyer calling in from his car in western North Dakota. And we're also in western North Dakota on stations in Tioga, to include Tioga. So thanks for coming on, Levi, and what you're doing. I think it's a great thing that you're touring all the school districts in the state. We'll be right back after this with Dean Catherine Berkland from NDSU College Business. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve, who is going from point A to point B somewhere, hopefully on halfway decent roads, or taking it slow anyway.
Every now and then we accidentally leave the studio door unlocked and he manages to escape.
Yeah, he contacted me the other night. He goes, oh, I gotta head out of town. And I'm really excited for my next guest. Big breaking news out of NDSU yesterday. The NDSU College of Business has launched the Center for Banking and Finance a new academic and industry-engaged hub designed to prepare students for careers in banking and finance while supporting the evolving workforce needs of the region's financial industry. So welcome to the show, Dean Catherine Berkland, who is the Dean of the College of Business at North Dakota State University, and out of Berry Hall is where they're located, right along 10th Street. So welcome to the show, and thanks for stepping out of your meeting.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Tim.
So you're at a chamber meeting, right, that you stepped out of?
Yeah, we're at the Midwest Economic Outlook Summit that the chamber puts on. So they've got about 500 people in person and another 5,000 or so watching online through, wow, all the chambers that they share with. So pretty exciting. They had Neil Kashkari, the president of the Minneapolis Fed, speak, mm-hmm, as the keynote this morning. So he had some great comments about what's going on here in North Dakota and Minnesota.
And I think NDSU has had him on campus before. And I mean, what a great, I mean, you guys just do an amazing job of getting some of the national thought leaders and people that are really in the trenches that you bring face to face with your students, and they just have the great opportunity to talk with them and learn from them. So kudos to what you've been doing.
Thanks.
So the new NDSU College Center for Banking and Finance, walk us through that.
Yeah, so we launched yesterday the Center for Banking and Finance, which is a center within the College of Business here at NDSU. And one of the reasons we did that, there's a couple of reasons. One, finance and really our banking minor and areas that are related to finance and banking are our fastest growing programs. Our students are interested in them. We see a lot of employers that are interested in hiring our students. And so we are excited to be able to offer not just a broader breadth of courses, but to be able to offer some industry engagement that's really powerful for students who want to enter the financial services industry, want to enter whether it's banking or financial planning, you know, it's credit or risk, or if you want to enter the appraisal field, you want to become an appraiser in North Dakota, those are really hard to find now. So This idea of opening students up to the broad breadth of options that are available in this region related to banking and finance. We are a hub for those services, and our students need to know that, and they want to be able to see those professionals. So the center allows us to really be purposeful and intentional about getting industry into our curriculum, into our experiences, so that students know when they come to NDSU, they're going to have experiences with industry professionals.
Well, I remember when they were first talking about bringing the College of Business downtown to Berry Hall, one of the key cornerstones was more interface with the banking industry. And
yep,
kudos to you. You've really done that now with this program in a hugely meaningful manner, because that's so vital. When you look at the amount of deposits that come into Fargo compared to other communities in the state of North Dakota, it isn't even close how much banking is being done, and really a lot of banking being done in downtown Fargo, or their hub is in the downtown Fargo, their administrative offices. Some of your partners, as I see, are Dakota Bank, Gate City Bank, Bell Bank, and Western State Bank. So you've got some good partners there. Did I miss anybody on that list?
Those are our four inaugural partners that took my idea and were willing to say, "Yep, let's try it. Let's create this together." Those four will help us to work with our new director. So Mark Jensen is the new director of the Center for Banking and Finance. He had been at Western State Bank for 20 years. So I was happy to have him come over full time to the college. He's been an adjunct faculty member teaching a class every semester for about 15 years and really has helped us to build what we have now for banking courses, but really has some great ideas for how we'll expand that, and has so many connections across North Dakota to different banking professionals, different parts of the industry. You know, in the world of banking, it's hard to even consider it just banking anymore. So traditional bank roles and jobs have really expanded. Many of our institutions now have an insurance arm, they have a wealth management arm. Mm-hmm. And so it's more than what we normally would think of as those sort of traditional banking roles. We're really seeing an expansion. You know, we have some banks in the region that are leaders in fintech. They're leaders in the ability to create payment systems and the ability to really take and make use of the blockchain. We had Bank of North Dakota in our building earlier this week for their FinTech Roadshow, and they have been a great partner, supportive of our center, and really willing to share the expertise of their team related to FinTech so that our students leave with knowledge that puts them ahead of graduates of other programs.
Yeah, and you know, the ones I'm talking, you know, that we mentioned, basically what are considered is kind of we'll call them locally owned banks.
Yep.
And that's a great thing. I mean, for example, I believe the Western State Bank is the old bank that goes back to governor now Senator Hovind's father. And so there, you know, there's a lot. You know, you have the Bell Bank, locally owned again. Gate City Bank is kind of owned by a larger breadth. So I think that's great too, because they're reinvesting back in the communities that they really want to make sure thrive and survive.
And
it's not just in Fargo.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, Dakota Bank was one of the first to really say, we're going to put a fair amount of might behind your plan and really step into that. And they have been a partner in our leadership program as well. You know, they are, their headquarters are in Aberdeen, South Dakota. So they're what I could still consider regionally owned, and so still pretty close to what we do here. And they have been a great supporter of higher education in the state of South Dakota for years. And so I'm excited to see them expand here in North Dakota, be able to talk about their presence here in the Fargo market.
Well, and you and I have both spent a little time in South Dakota, so we don't hold anything against South Dakota here.
We don't. No, no. I'm a firm believer that a rising tide lifts all boats. So if we can promote jobs around the region in banking and finance, that's good for all of us.
So you didn't just magically wave your wand at this. How long have you been at working to make this announcement happen yesterday? Because sometimes people think, oh,
yeah,
that's, you know, you get one meeting over coffee and do a lunch and you're done.
Yeah, yeah. I wish that was the case, Tim. I'd have a whole lot more projects to fulfillment if that was the case. But no, we've been working on this. It percolated as a tidbit of an idea about 2 years ago. We've been working on it full steam ahead for 18 months to make sure that we could launch this. My goal had been to hire a director by January 1st, which we were able to connect with Mark Jensen and be able to get him on board starting last week. So pretty close to my goal. And, you know, we've got students that are studying finance and banking already, but the really the industry engagement and the connection to the professionals, we'll be ready to launch for fall 26. So students that are studying finance and banking that are coming into NDSU starting even in fall 26, we're excited to have all the students here come back in the fall who are already here and have the new ones join as well. So it's not an easy process, but I appreciate that our partners were willing to have multiple conversations as we honed what the plan would be, what was a benefit to them. You know, I'm a firm believer in the industry support for this center and for the things that we do in the College of Business. While some would consider it simply philanthropy, I believe that the goal of that is, in their realm, it's a talent acquisition goal.
Right.
It is a marketing and branding goal. And so when I talk to our partners and when I talk about what we can deliver, I don't expect them to simply fund this center because they think I'm a great person. I expect them to fund this center because the things that we're doing deliver value for them as a partner. And so they've been willing to have those conversations about what that value is and how our students can benefit from the wonderful cultures that they've already created within their institutions.
Well, I think in a way the business get what I'll call a two for one, because they get the value of philanthropy, but they also get the huge, I think even bigger value, like you talked about, of growing the pool of really highly qualified, or in this case, I'll call it more qualified candidates that really fit their, you know, various needs that they have with advanced training. Do you have an estimate on how many students you think this might grow into over time?
Yeah.
And how many grads
might come
out of this program?
You know, I would love to say a lot. Let me be a little more specific than a lot. We have right now in the College of Business full-time students that are majoring in all of our majors across all the disciplines. We're at about 1,800 students in the College of Business. When we look at the finance program, it is the second largest program right behind business administration. And so it has about 350 students that are majoring in finance now. And that's, some of that's banking, some of that's wealth management or portfolio management. And I expect that we will expand that number. I don't know that I want to hit a specific target on the radio today, but I will say applications for our finance majors for fall, new entrance of new students coming in the fall, is up about 35%. So I'm excited that we'll have some more students entering in the fall that are majoring in finance.
And again, we're joined by Dean Catherine Birkeland, who is the Dean of the College of Business at NDSU. Been in your role for how many years has it been?
This is my third year, Tim. Third year. I'm about two and a half years in.
I kind of lose track. I remember I sat in on your interview and you did phenomenal, obviously. That's why you're here today. you've been just really doing a lot of good things. And really, I think one of your secret sauce is that it's not just about your ideas, but it's about harnessing the talent pool that you have within your academic unit there to really get the most out and really serve the public with greater quality grads that are coming out of the program with the requisite skill sets that business and industry is looking for today. So
I think, when I came to him, and I'll say this, I said it in my interview and I'll say it every day when anyone asks, the best part about coming here is that the faculty and the staff that we already had were doing amazing things, and the students were ecstatic to spend time with that faculty and staff. They were excited to go to class and they were engaged with the industry somewhat. But it is hard as a full-time faculty member to create those industry engagement opportunities. And so that I felt was my role in coming. So tooting the horn of everyone who's here and then facilitating that deeper connection to industry. It is the land grant mission. So,
Dr. Catherine, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little break. Can you hang on for 4 minutes or so and come back? And I'm guessing you're pacing the hallways outside of the presentation room. So we'll be right back with Dr. Catherine Birkeland, the Dean of the College of Business at NDSU. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flackel sitting in for Steve today, who is traveling. Again, if you want more information, they have a site you can go to. It's ndsu.edu/business/CBF. I said that because I'm not sure that, Dean, you probably wouldn't necessarily know that off the top of your head at this point. So I wanted to make sure. And again, everybody, the show is podcast. So if you didn't catch that, didn't have time to write it down, you can go to the podcast and find that out to find out more information. Or you can just Google NDSU College of Business. Banking probably will get you there for things. And again, I'm joined by College of Business Dean Catherine Birkeland, who has made the big announcement about a partnership with banking. What are some of the things that you're hearing from your banking partners as far as the evolution of the industry? Because everybody's evolving, moving towards something, moving away from something, AI impacting different places more than others. What are you hearing in terms of skill sets that they say, make sure your grads have exposure to this, for example?
Yeah, so I appreciate the question, and I'm going to do my best, but I would say you probably need to ask your local banker, and they can tell you that information as well. But for the ones that we're hearing, students need they need to know the fundamentals of sort of how banks operate and how banks make a profit, how banks are regulated. But in addition to that, the areas that our partners are seeing that will be useful for our students to have, areas that are based in analytics, so doing financial analytics and risk modeling, we're seeing an area of compliance. So students who might be interested in thinking about whether it's the accounting and fraud side, whether it's a legal background, that area of compliance, many of our partners say, let's say they're willing to train students in that if students are interested in the area of compliance, because it is still a person running the compliance part. We have not got to the point that AI is doing all of the compliance. And so making sure that our financial institutions are sound and making sure that they've complied with all of the federal regulations and the state regulations is important. We see in the College of Business, especially in our banking partners tell us this, and our sales center partners tell us this, our accounting firms and whatnot tell us that the professional skills of students are really important also. Making sure that students are able to navigate the workplace and navigate those relationships in the workplace. So some interpersonal communication, some basic professional skills, you know, even to the basics, Tim, as what's appropriate to wear, what conversations are appropriate to have. And then the one that we talk about across the College of Business is appropriate expectations for compensation. So making sure that our graduates understand what it's like to start as an entry-level position and what we should expect for those positions to pay, and really how you set yourself up to be promoted within a company. How do you set yourself up to be successful? Is that an additional credential? Is that an additional project that you take on to demonstrate your competency? So teaching students that how to develop within a company, how to be successful, is just as important as making sure that they're ready to go for that first job.
We got about 3 minutes left, Dr. Brooklyn. I'm going to slide down a little farther because I know you have a child that will probably be going on to college someday. Big softball star. I'll put that plug in.
Uh-huh.
But if people have children or grandchildren in high school, how can they better prepare those students to be successful when they get to NDSU or the College of Business to make sure that they, you know, have a very smooth transition? What could they do to check all those boxes?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things that are really helpful. I would say, you know, every parent of a high school student, a middle school student, is thinking about the cost of higher education. So thinking about if there are opportunities for your students in high school to do AP or dual credit or any of those things, making sure that the credits that they would gain from that will transfer to schools they want to go to. So keeping that in mind is important. That can reduce the cost of higher ed, which I know is an issue for everyone. Making sure that your high schooler knows how to ask for help. There are thousands of people who work at NDSU. Every single one would bend over backwards to help a student if they knew that the student needed help. So whether it's asking for tutoring help, whether it's visiting office hours, so that can be a little scary because you're going to go in and talk to your professor in their office you have to introduce yourself and you have to say the words, but we will help. And that is the purpose of the faculty, the advisors. You know, we have academic advising in the College of Business, so students keep the same advisor for 4 years. That's their person to make sure they can get the help that they need. So being able to ask for help from the professors, from the advisors, from the administrative staff, whoever it might be, your resident assistant. So teaching students, you know, teaching your high school students how to talk to those adults and ask for help if they need it is really important. Then I would say making sure that they know that they can change their mind. They don't have to have it all figured out when they get to college the first semester. It's all right to change your mind, and it's all right to learn things you didn't know before and then make a different decision.
Yeah, I agree. They have to advocate for themselves. We just have a little bit of time left, so I want to use that to, you know, NDSU is undergoing a lot of changes. We'll call it at the top, new president, you have a new interim president, eventually new permanent president, new provost. But it's really been great that the deans that are in place are really ensuring quality and success. So hats off and thanks to you. And again, congratulations on the big launch of the new program in banking. So thank you, Dr. Brooklyn, for coming on the show today. And I'll let you get back to your meeting. So thank you much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this break. I'm Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve and the Steve Hallstrom Show. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve today. I'm not sure. Will he be back tomorrow or Monday?
I believe Monday.
Monday. Okay.
I don't know who allows him to take so many days off. It's definitely not me.
He must have connections higher up.
He must. It's unfair, quite frankly.
Well, you know, you got to do some other things to, experience the world, as it were. Later on in the show, I'm going to have Representative Austin Schauer on from District 13 to talk about civility in politics, an event that's tonight in West Fargo put on by the Northern Plains Ethics Institute. Talk a little bit about committee work that's going on in the interim. And I think before we go to our next guest, you have a couple things you need to get out there with the people.
It's true. Just a few reminders. One of them is that today we're coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, where you can buy a car, truck, or SUV in just 15 minutes. And I'd also like to remind everyone that our phone line today is sponsored by Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. They've recently expanded, and they can get you in fast. They're now offering counseling, OT, PT, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment today and get in this week at valleychristian.com. valleychristiancounseling.co. And speaking of the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, I believe our next guest is currently on it right now, ready to rock and roll.
Well, welcome to the show. I want to welcome to the show Jill Kringstead, who is a public service commissioner in North Dakota, one of three members of the Public Service Commission. They are, in essence, what is often called the watchdogs for the citizens of North Dakota. She has been in that role since January of 25, where she replaced Julie Fedorchuk, who went on to become the U.S. Member of Congress in the House, a graduate of Bismarck State High School, or Bismarck Century High School, pardon me, and a 2000, I'm all nervous because I know her dad's listening to me, and I figured if I screw up, I'm going to catch it from, her dad and I are like lifelong friends. We, from the time we were young, we had the same pastor. We took piano lessons from Mrs. Redwood, the same piano teacher. We played baseball together for Allendale, so I know he's just like hovering on every syllable that I say to make sure I get it right, and I'll probably get a review from him when I'm done today. So I'm kind of nervous about him listening today because he said he was going to tune in, but anyway, she's a graduate of Bismarck Century High School and a 2012 graduate of Minnesota State University Moorhead, which is a bachelor's degree in accounting. She worked 3 years for Basin Electric Cooperative as an accountant and internal auditor. And from there, she went to the Public Service Commission, sometimes called the PSC, to be an accountant starting in 2016 before she became manager of the business operations from 2016 till 2025, at which time she became a public service commissioner. She also interned for Senator Hoeven and former Congressman Rick Berg. And again, she was appointed by Governor Kelly Armstrong based upon her experience in with the PSC. And we welcome you to the show, Jill.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Can I call you Jill or
would you prefer
I would call you commissioner? Because I know if it was your dad, no, he would insist on being called commissioner.
Oh, would he? Yes, Mr. President. That's what my kids enjoy calling him.
Yeah,
is Papa, President Pumpkinhead.
Oh, you know, okay.
Of those University of Jamestown.
Yeah.
Roots as well with the Jimmies.
Yeah, he was just recently enshrined into the Jimmy Hall of Fame. He was been a prominent banker in North Dakota, including former president of the bank in North Dakota. And I would also like to mention that your grandfather was the mayor of Ellendale at one time. So that was
during
when I was young. Your dad and I are the same age for baseball, shall we say. I'm a tick older than he is. So I think he's an April 1st baby, an April Fool baby, if I remember right.
He is. He is an April Fool's baby. And in fact, nobody believed that when my grandparents called to announce that he was born, nobody believed him till they heard him crying in the background.
And, and he's been crying and whining ever since, right? Okay. I better get to not be so mean to your dad, but it is funny. I mean, you know, he's just a super great guy all the years we've, you know, been together and worked together, and whenever I call him up, it was just like you take it off from where you left off. It's just a true friend. Tell us a little bit about your role as a public service commission. What do you do and what is not in your purview? Because I know there are certain things you don't deal with, like, for instance, you don't regulate Cass County Electric, for example, because they're, under your tutelage.
They're cooperative. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tim. So There's a lot of things that the Public Service Commission does. I would say that what we're probably most well known for is the regulation of electric, gas, and telephone public utilities in the state, and also the siting that we do of energy infrastructure. So whether that's power lines or pipelines or generation facilities. But what's interesting is I think if we just focused on those areas, I would argue we'd maybe have a different name. They're in a lot of other states, sometimes commissions like ours are known as PUCs or public utility commissions. But for us being a PSC and having service, there's some other areas that we do to protect citizens throughout the state that are maybe lesser known. Like one of them, for example, is we have a gas pipeline safety program. That the goal of that program, it deals with just the natural gas pipelines in our state, so not like intrastate pipelines or pipelines that would go, you know, to other states. But the goal of that program is we're working to enhance the public safety through the cooperation of and inspection of companies that are transporting gas. So we have a gas pipeline safety program. We also oversee the commercial measuring devices in our state, like scales and gas pumps that are used in commerce. And what I always like to say is, so when we go out and we inspect these devices, or we're verifying the work of private testing companies, that's so that our citizens have assurance that all of the transactions are fair and that a gallon is a gallon and a pound is a pound. So when you're going to the gas pump and putting gas in your car, you know that you're paying for a gallon and that's what you're getting. You're not getting a gallon and a half, mm-hmm. and you're not getting three quarters of a gallon. And one of the, I would say, more recent programs that we have at the commission is our railroad safety program. That started about a decade ago, and that was really spurred by the significant increase in the state that we were seeing in rail traffic. And so we wanted to ensure that the trains were operating in a safe manner. And so we have two inspectors as part of that program, one who specializes in tracks and inspecting the train tracks themselves, and the other is actually dual certified in the mechanical components of the train and also hazmat. And so they're working to reduce the number of accidents and derailments, equipment failures, to prevent injuries, economic loss, and environmental impacts. And that program's been operating for close to a decade, and we've really seen a significant increase in the safety and the decrease of impacts from rail safety issues.
So, Joe, if I can just interrupt on that point about
absolutely.
Rail safety, because, you know, again, they're hauling, you know, gas, you know, oil and gas products, probably some chemicals mm-hmm. sometime. But when I left the legislature, they were really on the forefront of using technology to measure the quality of tracks. So you could, you know, run something down the line and say, oh, okay, on mile 32.4, we got a problem that we got to get somebody in there and fix. As technology continued to advance, and are they able to use that in a meaningful way to, because it was just before, it was kind of like sight line of just eyeballing things and it looked like if they're okay or not.
Yeah, so they are using a lot of new technology, but they also, like what our track inspector does, Tim, is he actually will go out and walk the tracks himself. So he's not just sitting looking at mm-hmm. line of sight. He is walking, you know, the miles of tracks and measuring to make sure, you know, that the tracks are meeting the federal requirements okay. and are safe.
And we got about 30 seconds left, so I'm just going to kind of segue into it. Maybe we'll break your because again, we're statewide, as far out as Tioga, and people are listening online, and you can get it on a podcast that are archived. But I think when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the issues that are before the PSC that you're challenged with, and if there's anything on the status of the power grid in North Dakota and nationwide, which is often a topic that pops up as far as do we have enough capacity, particularly when we're talking about some of the really big AI factories that are coming online. So we'll be right back after this break with Jill Kringsted, Public Service Commissioner for the State of North Dakota. I'm Tim Flacco, sitting in for Steve on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. And if you ever get a chance to see this band in concert, absolutely positively see them. It is fantastic. So I am Tim Flacco, sitting in for Steve this morning. He'll be back on Monday. I'm joined by Public Service Commissioner Jill Kringsted, talking of a number of issues. So what are some of the current issues before the Public Service Commission that are really kind of out, you know, in terms of pivotal that you're seeing? I know you talked about some things earlier as far as things you do, but what are some of the pending ones? And I know you can't say how you'll vote on anything because that would kind of negate the value of having a hearing, but can you share right. any of those with us?
Yeah, so I because we have a lot of active open cases, I can't speak to those specifically, but what I can talk about is kind of more in general the issues that we're dealing with. So we have seen, especially under President Trump, really a shift kind of in our national policy when it comes to energy that was absolutely needed. We are seeing, you mentioned data centers and the growing demand that we are seeing for power due to just everybody having more electrical devices now than they did even 5-10 years ago. And then with the emergence of data centers, the need for power is growing even more. And that's spurring talks on things like nuclear energy and how can nuclear energy play a role in our fuel mix. And it's issues like this, Tim, that actually makes me really passionate about why I'm running and why I want to continue to serve on the Public Service Commission. So, you know, my dad, you had mentioned that he had worked at Bank of North Dakota. And so he'd recently retired right before I had the honor of being appointed into this role by Governor Armstrong last year. And when he retired, he gifted me some things from his office to use in my new role. And one of the things he gave me was a jar that had little slips of paper in it called Food for Thought. And they just have different quotes and sayings in it. And I remember my first week in office, I reached in there because legislative session was going on. There was just a lot happening. And I said, I could use a little inspiration. And I pulled out a quote from that jar, and I liked it so much that it's sitting on my computer monitor at work, and I look at it every day. And it says, "We are continually faced by great opportunities, brilliantly disguised as insoluble problems." And I think a lot of the things that we just talked about, some may see as, you know, there's insoluble, those are just, those challenges are too big, those are problems that we can't solve, and I don't believe that. And so I really want to be part of finding the solutions to what some people say as insoluble problems and saying, how can we turn these into good opportunities? How can we take what we do so well here in North Dakota by having everything, coal, oil, natural gas, wind, solar, how can we take all those things and bring those ideas to the regional and national level?
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes left, so I want to cover at least two topics. One I'll get to is gravel pit reclamation, because that's a personal question I have. But are you hearing much, because I follow the AI and the buildings and stuff, you know, and the concern about energy and everything. Are you hearing much talk or at your meetings that you go to nationally and otherwise about the so-called micro nuclear plants that they're talking about or have set up next to some of those AI factories to provide the electricity to run those? Are you hearing much about that at all, or is that still very, very new?
We're hearing about it, Tim. I would say it's still pretty new. You know, to your point, these data centers require a lot of electricity, and they're electricity that needs to be on 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. And so while like small modular nuclear is in the discussion, I'd say it's still emerging. And so things that I think we're looking at is, okay, can we use some of our existing resources, you know, some of our, not here in North Dakota, but throughout the country, there's been some coal plants that have been set to retire. So I know, you know, some of the thing that's being looked at is, instead of, you know, prematurely retiring some of these resources that can provide this baseload power, which we desperately need for our grid, can a data center kind of co-locate at an existing coal facility? That's something that we're actually already doing here in North Dakota with one of our facilities. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at that. I know entities throughout the state are also looking at other things, whether that be gas-fired generation or things like that as well.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Randy Christman is also a public service commissioner. I know he'll get on me if I don't say that. And then Sherry Hofford-Haugen is also one of your. So basically it takes two votes to get something either defeated or moved through. Now, gravel pits. We have a gravel pit on our farm and ranch, and it's technically in South Dakota, so it's not under your purview. But, you know, I kind of worry about reclamation in terms of they just kind of keep digging out of there, and they've moved, and they haven't taken that big pile of topsoil and done anything with it. What's a realistic expectation of after they've moved on to a different site in part of that same farmland, or actually pasture land in this case, that they take that topsoil and reclaim the area?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, Tim, because that's actually one area that we oversee at the commission that I think very few public service commissions do, is we do regulate coal mining and reclamation. And right now in the state, there's over 137,000 acres that are permitted for mining activity. And so to your point, that's exactly what we do at our active coal mines. We have 6 active coal mines right now in the state and 1 mine that's in full reclamation. And so that's our role in that process, is to ensure that as this land is reclaimed and returned to production, that it's just as good, if not better, than it was prior to mining, and that it's going to continue to sustain that level of production over time. And I can't tell you how impressive that program is. I've had the opportunity to go up to several of our mines in the state, and so I've stood on land that was undisturbed, and then right next to it is land that had been mined and reclaimed, and you would never know that coal mining has taken place. Yeah. It's extremely impressive.
I've seen some of that on our tours, and that's just, you know, totally, totally true. Hey, I should mention that earlier this week I was at a meeting with General Mike Haugen, who many people across the state know, and you know, Mike's not really gushy with compliments, I don't think. I mean that's not a bad thing. It's just, yeah, you know, he's pretty couched in his approach. But I told him that I was having you on the radio show, and he goes, "Oh, I've heard her speak, and she is spectacular in terms of her presentation, her topic, her understanding of what the challenges are and how to solve them." So a big stamp of kudos to you from retired General Haugen. I have to always make sure I say retired. So want to thank you for coming on the show today, Jill. It's
Absolutely,
always interesting to hear from
me.
The Public Service Commission. And you guys do very valuable work in terms of being a watchdog for the state of North Dakota, whether it's elevators to rail lines to pipelines to a whole host of very diverse topics. So thanks for being on the show, and we'll be right back after this break with Representative Austin Schauer, who is in studio already, representing District 13 in West Fargo area. So I'll be right back after this. I'm Tim Flagel, sitting in for Steve on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Ow. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco, and we're on the home stretch for the morning show here. So, again, if you want to email us, you can email us at studio@flagfamily.com, or you can text line at 701-237-1590. Or if you just want to text me, if you're one of 3 people that don't have my cell phone number, it's 701-367-5954. You can text me there. And, again, all shows are podcast in perpetuity, or at least until somebody screws up and accidentally erases them. If you want to listen to it later on, you can certainly do that. Or if you want to share it with somebody, you can do that. Or if I said a email address or something too quickly that you couldn't get to, you can always go to the podcast and see that. Thanks again, Addison, for running the board today. Appreciate it, as always, sir.
Every time. Thank you for taking over the mic. Better you talking than me. I don't want to Now, I'm not saying this like I don't want to, but I am not brave enough to host a show. Couldn't be me.
Yeah, it's a big jump, I suppose.
I'd run out of stuff to say after 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd probably be surprised. So tonight in West Fargo, an ethics expert and 2 West Fargo political leaders will be discussing the topic of local governance matters, civil communication in the current climate. Dr. Dennis Cooley, NDSU Professor of Philosophy and Ethics and Director of the Northern Plains Ethics Institute, will be joined by Amy Zundahl, a member of the West Fargo City Commission, and our next guest, Representative Austin Schauer from District 13 in West Fargo. The program will be held at the West Fargo Fire Department, I guess in case the discussion gets heated. Is that what the deal is? At 1201 10th Avenue East. Program is free and open to the public. Representative Schauer is a business development manager for ProSource Professional Recruiters and has served in the House since 2019, where he chairs the Government and Veterans Affairs Committee and serves on the Industry, Business, and Labor Committee. Welcome to the show, Representative Schauer.
It's nice to be here, Tim. Thank you for having me. And, you know, you mentioned tonight's program, and one of the guests is a expert in civility. And can you imagine being at home with your wife and having a little bit of a discussion that maybe flares up just a hair, and your wife looks at you and says, oh, you're an expert in civility, and you just said that?
Well, I can't imagine having a wife, so there
well,
you go. I
mean, trust me.
That's a double step for me, I guess, maybe. So,
You know, when they initially called me, I thought to myself, gosh, you know, what do I know about civility? You know, to me, especially when you're from this part of the country, and we've got my youngest daughter's out of New York, Long Island, New York, and she married a New Yorker. And so you talk about civility out there versus
mm-hmm.
here.
Right.
I mean, what we do here is we may not like somebody, but we don't tell them. We just wait until they're gone, and then we talk behind their back. I mean, that's just the
right.
way we do it.
Yep.
Out there, it's just like nose to nose. You know exactly where you're at, and it's a little awkward, a little bit uncomfortable, but it probably is the way it should be, you know. And the civility, you know, there's personal relationships getting along, and then there's the public side, and then there's the politics side. So it gets to be a wide open area, but I just think it all comes down to respect for each other, you know, listening.
And respect for the office.
Yes.
I mean, I don't care if you like this person or that person, or the governor or the president, the public service commissioner or whatever, you know, show some respect for the office because they are trying to do their best to represent you. And I always say, you know, I used to sit by Senator Judy Lee on a number of sessions, and Judy and I on one bill could be battling against each other. We disagree, right.
Yes.
But it was always about attacking the bill, you know, not the problem, about, you know, our elected officials attacking problems, not each other. Because on the next bill, we might be the only two in favor of something. So it's kind of live to fight another day.
And I would say in Bismarck, in the North Dakota legislature, and I've been in four sessions now, I think for the most part that does happen. Every once in a while, though, it gets to be fairly personal on what happened to the bill. And
right.
sometimes there's the hog housing, and sometimes there's this and that. And then sometimes there's accusations. Sometimes there's things that happened in the committee itself. So it can get a little personal. But, you know, you can have words, but you shake your hands and you move on. Because you're right. The next day, you're going to need each other.
Yeah. I remember a couple of occasions where somebody went beyond what they should be saying on the floor. Tony Grimberg was presiding that one day, and he took the gavel, and he struck it so hard that there's those little wooden plates that they hit. It went flipping up in the air, and he hit it again. I mean, it was. And another time, the senator from Jamestown, who's kind of the dean of the Senate, Dave Nething.
Yeah, sure.
Somebody stepped out of line, and he just gets up and grabs his mic and literally yells as loud as he can, and he was behind me, into the microphone, Mr. President. I mean, he was just yelling. Literally, Bill Bowman was sitting next to him. Bill did a duck and cover. He didn't know it was coming, and he was so afraid. But, you know, Senator Nething made the right point. You know, there's certain rules you have to follow, and you don't step beyond that. And, you know, whether we, you know, on the Senate side, at least we can't say a person's name, a business
right,
name.
Right,
it's all,
exactly.
Everything has to be addressed through the president, so you're not kind of getting into these little, you know, scratching somebody in the eye a little bit. So.
And I think it's probably changed a little bit. My first session was 2019, and you over the years, you've heard stories about John Dorso
mm-hmm.
and how he would pull people aside, and sometimes the language was not always so good. And Al Carlson, I mean, he really controlled the caucus with a bit of an iron fist. There's
yep.
no doubt about that. And then you had Chet Pollard and then Mike LaFleur, who have completely different styles.
Right.
They want to work with people. They want to bring people together as much as possible. So, you know, it kind of depends a little bit on the style of the leader, but I think for the most part it's gotten a little like society. I mean, if you say something that someone is offended by and you're just trying to help, I mean, you could face a lawsuit or you might be called into the office. I mean, it's just a little bit,
yeah.
I don't know if softer is the right word, a little bit more sensitive. It's not like it used to be, and I'm not saying what it used to be was the best way, but it's definitely you have to adjust in what you say and how you say it.
Yeah, I mean, Al and I are friends, and we had a conference talking about the big K-12 bill. It was day 80, and the House had just killed 13-19, the big bill. And I said things to Al that usually are only reserved for working cattle when you're working cattle, because I just let it fly because I'd had it, you know. And
especially day 80.
People, day 80.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
And for those of you who don't know, you only get 80 days. There is no day 81, and there's nothing you can do. You have to finish that day.
Right.
And I made it perfectly clear that if we didn't finish, it was going to be on his head because they killed the bill. And so, it, I mean, it seemed like some of this started – in D.C., out east, like you kind of talked about with your family. And we thought we were fairly immune from some of this. And it seems like with all the 24/7 news cycles and social media and everything, it just kind of migrated into North Dakota. And I don't know if term limits, I think it maybe will make it worse because people go, I'm termed out after this. What do I care? I'm just going to let it fly. I don't have to worry about what so-and-so says because – you know, I'm never going to run again.
Well, you know this better than most people because you've served out in Bismarck, you've served in the legislature, and a person's not going to understand it until they're there. So that's understandable. But in North Dakota, there really is a lot of civility. I mean, last session we voted on over 900 bills, mm-hmm. 900 bills. And in your committee, my committee, Government of Veterans Affairs, which I chair, there's 14 members and two are Democrats. But we get along very, very well. There's only 11 Democrats on the House, but we get along very, very well. And the 11 Democrats can sway a vote on a bill. So they have power. They have impact because, oh, there's only 11 out there. Unfortunately, in North Dakota right now, and you're aware of this, Tim, there's an element, the Bastiat group, the Rick Becker mm-hmm. group, the kind of the hard right Sons of Liberty, very difficult group to get along with from time to time, and they have a very strong agenda. And so the fracture or the conflict or the lack of civility oftentimes is between within that party, within the Republican Party, people going after each other. And especially now as we enter an election year, you see some of the – in fact, in District 13, you mentioned West Fargo. A couple months ago, there was a flyer that came out in the mail in District 13, which basically ridiculed Senator Judy Lee because of her age. So it's one thing, okay, you don't like Judy because of a certain vote, and that's fine, you know, and then let her back herself or let her explain why she voted the way she voted. But you're going to ridicule her and mock her because of her age? Who does that? And that was somebody within the Republican Party that wants Judy out. So, I mean, that kind of shenanigans, that kind of lack of civility is very disturbing. I think it's even more disturbing than if it was just R&D. Because now it's R&R, and then you're the you know the rhino, or you're this or you're that, and so it is what it is, and so
there's a lot more labeling than ever happened before.
Oh,
and the oddity is that some of the people that kind of were behind that mailer are big fans of the president, who is basically like the same age as Senator Judy Lee.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like, well, okay, what, you know. I mean, that's why I always tell people, I said, you know, when I was younger, they go, are you going to run for governor? Are you going to run for Congress? I'm like, no, not while my parents are alive, because I don't want to have them go, you know, read about Tim Flack who doesn't like baby puppies, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just silly.
But you do like babies, just not, you know, puppies.
That's well, maybe puppies more so, because I don't know. I'm always scared of holding a kid because it will scream or something like that, or have an eruption.
I will say,
if
I may interrupt. Interrupt just for a moment. I've got a friend of mine. A couple of months ago, he mentioned this to me, and I just thought it was so good. He said, I want to become the man that my dog thinks that I am.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's just a beautiful thing to do. And when it comes to civility, you know, we tell our kids and our grandkids, you know, respect others and listen and don't be a little punk, you know. And yet now this, you see adults doing this sort of stuff that kids would do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I find it very discouraging, to be honest with you. And I pull back on social media, almost all social mm-hmm. media, because I don't want to see it. I don't want to see something someone posted, and then I feel less, you know, likely. I like them a little less because of what they posted. That's not good.
Yeah. I was, you know, because my parents followed things, and, you know, there's somebody who worked in the energy industry in North Dakota, electrical energy industry that dad respected. He told my dad one time, Tim is really a good statesman. And my dad was so proud of that. And then now gave me a new reputation to live up to. It's like, okay, you know, the things that you wanted to say,
maybe not.
What a statesman says, you know. I think we're about up against a break here. I think one of the things we want to come back, and we're here with Representative Austin Shower, District 13 from West Fargo. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the interim, what he's hearing back on the $1,600 property tax relief, and are there things that they're kind of looking to modify or expand as they move forward? And we'll take it from there. Excuse me. I'm Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve today on his show. He'll be back on Monday, and I'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco sitting in for this last little segment as we get ready to take it home. I'm joined by Representative Austin Shower of District 13 here in West Fargo. And we also know that we're going out across the state, so we're covering a lot of areas that are of interest to people all across the state, not just up and down the Red River Valley. One thing I wanted to get to is the special session that just happened a little while back because you and the people in the legislature, in concurrence with the governor and human services, had to come up with a quality plan and process to spend the $200 million for rural health care. So where are you at on that? What happened? How will that go out? What are the checks and balances built in? How will the billing go even? Gosh, you know they got to spend that money and then hope that whatever they had qualified, I hope it's all pre-qualified. But
it's just a bit bizarre, to be honest with you. I mean, we saw when Trump came in and Doge and Elon Musk and, from my vantage point, and I'm a Republican, I'm a conservative, I thought they did a fabulous job of going through and reducing government and searching for fraud and increasing technology, et cetera, et cetera. And those are huge savings. And then all of a sudden they turn around, the big, beautiful bill, and here's $50 billion for each state, not each state, but for all the states. And then North Dakota turns around and gets $400 million minimum. It might even be more than that over the next 4 to 5 years. And here's $200 million that the state of North Dakota has to spend by October 1st of this year, and it has to be rural health. So, I mean, I just have to tip my cap to Patrick Traynor, Health and Human Services, and Emily O'Brien, former legislator out of Grand Forks. They have worked pretty much, and their staff, they have worked pretty much morning, noon, and night to figure that out. In fact, they've actually helped the federal people that are running this program to be able to somehow get it into a process, to the application, et cetera, et cetera. But there's only so many ambulances that you can order, and it takes like 2-3 years to get an ambulance, and you have to pay for it now. And there has been an interest in the Bank of North Dakota maybe doing a short-term loan for some of these smaller clinics and health facilities that they can actually afford to do something. You can't add on. It can't be a new building. You can renovate. You can take this room and make it into a fitness plan. So they're working hard on it. But that money has to be spent by October 1st of this year, $200 million. So, Tim, do you have a health issue that we could throw you a million or two?
I'm not rural. So okay. There you go. There's
the
problem.
That's true, too. And that was the first question I asked. What is rural and what isn't?
I mean, is Castleton rural in this case?
I think it is.
Okay.
There is a population on the cities and the municipalities, and I think Castleton.
Because I'm guessing like maybe Valley City would be on the cusp, but they're right. I don't know. I mean, because what people out east think is rural.
Oh, I know.
Includes Fargo.
We're proud because we're reaching 800,000. Well, in New York City, it's 8 million people, and then 20 million come into work. So, but I mean, it is what it is. It's federal government, and so hopefully it will be able to help a lot of different people and when it comes to healthcare in rural North Dakota. Yeah.
I'm going to throw you a curveball here. You are the business development manager for ProSource Professional Recruiters.
Professional. Oh, my goodness. I better.
So
I better be good.
NDSU is in the process of looking to hire a new president. From your perspective, with your professional background, with your interest in the state and the community, with your interest in the well-being of NDSU, what skill sets do you think you would put as priority skill sets? And you can't say just like Cook 2.0. That's not an answer.
Well, first of all, if I'm looking at candidates, I'd have to start with Tim Flacco. I've known Tim a long time.
I'm not a candidate, by the way, so there you go.
We'll
rule out that rumor.
It's interesting. We met with the consultants who are working on this position, and they're you know, when it comes to a resume, oftentimes businesses and companies will put together a resume, not only what they want from that position, but all the other areas that nobody else wants, you know. Mm-hmm. So you get, instead of like 10 to 12 actual boxes, you get like 15 or 20 or 30. To me, it has to be somebody who has experience in FBS. I mean, we're moving to FBS. We have to have that kind of experience and that kind of background. That's number one. Number two, like Cook and others, you have to have a personality. You have to be likable. You have to be warm, and you have to work hard, because the CEO for NDSU is not going to get into the day-to-day. The CEO has to be out there raising money for the college. They have to be the front face, and then you have to have that work ethic, and then you also have to be able to have the education background, but not too deep, because I know NDSU through Cook and their other programs, they've tried to more and more include business connecting to the students, you know, and you know, I think NDSCS and Wahpeton Science, they've done a great job over the years connecting students to the industry, to the business, and I think NDSU is really working hard in that direction. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to have whoever the next person has to have that as part of their what they've done in the past and how important it is for the future.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be an interesting process. I think, you know, they'll probably have a lot of great applicants. I hear there's, you know, current presidents that are, you know, out there, business leaders, et cetera, and just to find that right fit. Because the right person for NDSU might not be the right person for, you know, Montana State or something like that. So,
oh, we look forward to it, and it's a great job.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming on. Your presentation tonight is at
7 o'clock
in West Fargo Fire Hall, our department. So I'm Tim Flacco. Thanks for letting me join you today. Steve will be back on Monday. And the guest host tomorrow is okay. You'll find out then. So have a good day, everybody. Drive safe out there. Give a little extra time for braking. We all want to be safe. Bye.